This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to episode number 275 of the Young Investors Podcast. Ta-da. Hamish Hotto is down in Melbourne. I am here in Canberra, as per usual, and we are ready to bring you the week's stock market investing news. Are you excited, yep. Hamish?
I am excited. And yeah, you're in Canberra, I'm in Melbourne. Good. But soon, we will both be in Omaha, where we are, finally, yeah. We can finally announce, I kind of stole your announcement, I'm going to take it though, we are finally going to be going back to Omaha for the third year in a row, which is super exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we finally locked in that trip, which is exciting. We've had such a good time the first two trips to Omaha for the Berkshire shareholder meeting. So very excited to go back this time in partnership with Morning Brew, who is our sponsor for this year's trip. So that will be very cool. But you'll hear more about that as the trip approaches. But yeah, we're gonna go. So definitely, if you are headed to Omaha this year, let us know. There's so much stuff. The Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting, in my experience, and I'm sure I speak on for you as well, Hamish, it's not even just the Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting. It's like a festival. There's so much stuff that happens around the meeting. All the big super investors of the world are there. Guy Spier, Monish Prabhai, Bill Gates, Tim Cook, they're all in town. It's so bizarre. This is a little town in America, and for one weekend of the year, everybody that's anybody is there. Yeah. And there's so many events to go to. There's so many lunches, so many meet and greets. It's just such a great time. And at least the past 2 years, like, we've seen so many of you guys there as well. It's been really, really fun to hang out with you guys. So I'm really excited for that again. So if you see us, if you're going to Omaha, definitely come up and say hello. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it should be a pretty special year this year because, of course, sadly, Charlie Munger is no longer with us. And this will be the first Berkshire event since he passed away. Was it at the beginning of this year, I believe, in January? Or maybe at the... December of last year, maybe.
End of last year.
Yeah, that was his birthday. Yeah. I think that's in January of... was going to be in January of this year. But yeah, I'd imagine that they're going to put on somewhat of a kind of a memorial for him at the event. So I think that'll be really nice to be able to be there in person for that as well.
Yeah, and I think more than ever we'll hear more from, Greg Abel, Ajit Jain. I wonder if we'll see Ted and Todd up there as well.
True.
On the investment side. That'd be interesting. But yeah, it'll be a very, 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 very fun weekend. If you can make it, if you're in the States and you listen to us, if you can make it, definitely come along. Like, I know it's a bit weird, like, oh, why do I want to go to Omaha for a weekend? But if you're a value investor and you respect kind of the Warren Buffett way of going about your investing, you have to go to at least one. And like I say, all the big investors there, you get to meet them. Everyone's there to have a chat and have a good time with each other. Definitely come along if you can make it. But so we're super excited to be going back again. Back to America. It's a long flight over, but we're happy to make the trip. And I'm looking forward to it, Hamish. All right, what are we talking about today, Hamish? I'm going to be talking about, just quickly, Jamie Dimon's letter to shareholders, because that just came out recently. And also, there's been some interesting news about some chip makers being given some money to bring some manufacturing to the US. So talk about that. What are you talking about?
Interesting. Yeah, I've got March US CPI, so inflation data, which will be interesting to kind of go through. We'll talk about another one of the Fed's inflation measures that they like to follow, and how it's looking a little bit scary when you kind of break down some of the numbers. And we'll talk about the Forbes billionaire list, which was just updated for 2024. We can talk about how the billionaires of the world are richer than ever. Yeah. And I just want to apologize. We're working with a little bit of lag today. So there's kind of a bit of a, it's like a 1 second disconnect between me and Brandon. So if there's any like weird pauses or us talking over each other, that's kind of why. Nice.
There's no lag, Hamish.
There's no lag at all.
take us into the sponsor, Hamish.
With that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days.
Nice. All right, Hamish. Can we start actually with the CPI stuff?
Sure.
Because inflation, there's no doubt inflation is a hot topic because it was really, really high. Interest rates went up. It came down. But as we know, it's not quite down enough. And the Fed is saying, oh, we might cut interest rates. People are saying, oh, I don't know about that. Inflation's still persisting. So give us an update, Hamish. What on earth is going on?
Yeah, so kind of the main headline you're probably seeing around US inflation is that once again, for maybe the third or fourth month in a row, it's continued to come in slightly hotter than expected. Nothing crazy unexpected, but just kind of persistently month by month, a little bit worse than what the Fed has been expecting and what the market has been expecting. So, of course, what we're talking about is the Consumer Price Index release for March, which comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, if you're interested in kind of looking at the data yourself. On a headline basis, the Consumer Price Index came in at 3.5% year over year, which was slightly higher than the 3.4% which was expected. So as I mentioned, kind of just slightly above what was expected. On a month over month basis, inflation was 0.4%. So in the last 30 days, there's been, well, in the 31 days of March, there was 0.4% inflation, which was actually the same amount that was in February as well. And if you take that 0.4% rate and you annualize it, so you assume 0.4%, 0.4% every single month for a year, the annualized rate is 4.9%. So in the last couple of months, the rate has not only is, you know, headline inflation still 3.5%, which is outside of the 2% kind of target range, but on a month-by-month basis, it's actually been kind of re-accelerating a little bit.
Yeah, and I spoke about this in a relatively recent video, but if you looked at the month-over-month data kind of towards the, I think it was the end of last year maybe, it's just slowly going down. So, you know, the month-over-month, it's getting less and less and less, and that's super exciting. But then this year we've had month-over-month of 0.1, then it was 0.2, then it was 0.3, and now it's up to 0.4. So you're right. I mean, this is not the only metric definitely that, say, the Fed looks at when determining what kind of monetary policy they're going to implement, but we want it to be inflation to be trending down. I mean, that's and this data kind of flies in the face of that idea. So, not the best, but yeah, just a really interesting time. It'd be interesting to see how they kind of talk about this and what they do going forward.
In terms of core inflation, which of course takes the headline figure and strips out the volatile energy and food categories, core inflation came in at 3.8% year over year, so continues to run hotter than headline inflation. And I believe that's because energy on a year over year basis has been negative. So on a headline basis, that makes inflation lower. On a month over month basis for core inflation, it was also 0.4%. month over month. So that gives us, again, a 4.9% annualized rate for core inflation. Within core inflation, or just within inflation, the CPI figure in general, the biggest contributors for the month were shelter and energy. So energy rose 1.1% in the month. And that actually comes after a 2.3% increase in February as well. So actually last year, energy costs, particularly kind of oil, for example, was going down. There was actually deflation in energy. in the last few months, that's kind of pivoted again. And that's kind of normal. Energy fluctuates a lot. That's why we kind of strip it out and we look at core inflation sometimes instead of just headline inflation, because the energy prices go up and down significantly. But certainly, at least in the last couple of months, energy has been a big contributor, 1.1% and then 2.3%. So that's like 3.5% inflation in just 60 days from the energy sector.
Wow.
And then the other big contributor in the last month has been shelter, which rose 0.4%. And shelter is really important to watch at the moment because it actually contributes about a third to the overall CPI figure. On a consumer basis, the consumer price index kind of assumes that shelter is about a third of household expenditure, which, you know, is generally true.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, the story for CPI at the moment is a lot around shelter. So a slowdown in shelter inflation is actually a big part of the Fed's thesis for their rate cuts this year. So they have a pretty strong belief that shelter inflation, even though it's quite strong at the moment, will ease throughout the year. And there seems to be some evidence that this could be true. Essentially, if you look at how the CPI figure calculates rent, for example, and the growth of rent month by month and year by year, it essentially calculates it by looking at current rental contracts. And a lot of those rental contracts, of course, would have been signed 6-12 months ago, maybe 7 months ago, 4 months ago. So the CPI shelter figure includes a lot of lagged data. And that's just right, kind of based on how they calculate it. Whereas then you could look at something like going on Zillow, for example, and just looking at the current asking rents. So what are people actually renting their houses out for today, and looking at that growth. And if you look at that, it looks like the growth of rent has been kind of coming down over time, which will appear in the CPI figure in the coming months. So assuming what's currently happening in the rental market continues throughout the year, you would expect CPI, the shelter part of CPI, to continue to ease. And that's a part of the Fed's thesis as to why inflation is kind of a little bit hot at the moment. But as the year goes on, shelter will kind of ease as a part of the overall figure.
Interesting. I didn't know that's how it worked, but the way you explain it definitely makes sense. If you kind of look at just the listings and what people are actually doing right now in terms of rent, as opposed to the lag. Very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's other, it's not just rent that goes obviously into the shelter figure, but that seems to be one of the kind of larger contributors. But of course, for now, the overall inflation figure, even core inflation, is still considerably away from the 2% target that the Fed is trying to get inflation to over the long run. And the only other thing I wanted to mention is this, I just took a look this morning, the US stock market is up 13% this year so far. And I would be pretty confident in saying that a very large portion of that growth is on the hope or the expectation that there will be multiple rate cuts this year. So it'll be interesting to see whether inflation continues to run hot and whether interest rates can be cut, because I would imagine if what's happening right now continues for the next few months, I think it's very doubtful that the Fed would be interested in cutting rates, assuming that the month-over-month rate continues to climb. And it'll be interesting to see how that impacts the market, which seems to still be very, very optimistic about rate cuts coming out this year.
That's interesting that you bring this up, because I did not read ahead into what you were going to talk about. It's interesting you bring that up, because that's actually a point that Jamie Dimon made in his annual letter to shareholders, because he is a little bit bearish. He thinks people are getting a little bit frothy, a little bit bubbly, a little bit speculative. Mm-hmm. And he says that there is that bit of a disconnect, that if things don't go as we plan, why are you getting so excited? So I'll talk about that later. Yeah. But it's interesting that you mentioned that. Yeah. Mm,
yeah. Awesome. The only other thing I want to mention was talking about super core inflation. So if headline inflation,
super core.
If headline inflation, if core inflation wasn't enough for you, there's another figure that the Fed likes to watch, which is called super core inflation.
Strip out everything, I say.
Yeah, we just strip out everything and we look at that. Oh, look at that. Zero again. another month of zero.
Classic.
But basically, yes, you're kind of right. They do continue to strip out more things from their headline figure in this super core inflation figure. They take out energy and food, just like core inflation. And then they also exclude shelter. Why is this figure useful? Like, clearly, you know, energy, food, and shelter are some very big and important goods and services that that households need to spend money on. So what's even the point of stripping these out? Well, some Fed officials argue that in the current climate, since they see elevated housing inflation as a temporary problem, that it's actually not a good gauge of underlying prices. So since they are pretty confident, and look, who knows, the Fed has been confident in the past and been wrong, but since they are confident that...
transitory.
Exactly. They're confident that shelter... I like how they didn't use that word. They changed it to temporary. But since they think shelter is transitory, they also like looking at a figure for inflation, which excludes it. Supercore inflation rose 4.8% in the year to March. And if you annualize the last 3 months of supercore inflation, it's running at an 8% annualized rate. So... you know, take that for what it is. It's obviously a very stripped down inflation figure. But if you take out food, energy, and shelter, and you're looking at just the other categories and seeing how things are changing, like apparel, auto parts, that kind of thing, there's still quite a bit of inflation in some pockets of the economy. But yeah, take it with a pinch of salt because yeah, you're starting to remove a lot.
It just sounds so memey, supercore inflation. Can you imagine Jerome Powell being like, the economy remains strong, and the Fed is on track and is very much targeting bringing inflation down to 2%. If we look at supercore inflation, what is? We look at Superman inflation.
Yeah. Sounds like a disaster movie.
Yeah. Supercore inflation. Oh, no. The Earth's supercore is getting too hot.
It's inflating.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Is that what you've got to talk about on the CPI front, Hamish?
Yeah. Tell us about, give us the details of Jamie Dimon. What's he got to say?
Yeah. Jamie Dimon. He's, he's an interesting guy to follow or to keep up with or to listen to because, you know, we listen to investors like Warren Buffett or late Charlie Munger or Monish Pabrai because they're, you know, putting their money to work. But Jamie's a little bit different. I still listen to what he has to say, but in a different capacity. He's an interesting one because he is obviously the CEO of JP Morgan and has been since 2006. And JP Morgan is America's largest bank. It's got $3.4 trillion in assets. So he's a very I don't know if he's an important figure in the economy, but he's someone that will see everything. He's privy to a lot of information and he analyzes a lot of information about the economy. A very interesting read. It's a long letter, so I'm really going to condense this. There were a few themes in his letter. The first one that he decided to address was AI. So he said, while we do not know the full effect or the precise rate at which AI will change our business or how it will affect society at large, we are completely convinced the consequences will be extraordinary. The impact will, quote, possibly be as transformational as some of the major technological inventions of the past several hundred years. Think the printing press, the steam engine, electricity, computing, and the internet. So he's definitely... Yeah. I don't know. He's someone that definitely thinks there's a huge amount of hype and speculation in terms of AI in the stock market. But in terms of the technology, he is quite bullish. And it's also, he said, that's something that they are looking to embrace at JP Morgan. So he said JP Morgan now has more than 2,000 AI and machine learning employees and data scientists working on 400 applications, including fraud detection, marketing, and risk controls. The bank is also exploring the use of generative AI in software engineering, customer service, and ways to boost employee productivity. So he's definitely bullish on AI, Hamish.
Yeah, I think there's just so many parallels to you know, late 80s, early 90s internet. And if you look back and watch interviews or news kind of like 60-minute kind of segments on the internet in like 1993, it gives you a fascinating insight because there's so many parallels to the things that people are saying about AI today. And
And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked to put it in that list with like steam engine, electricity, the internet. I think it certainly fits in there.
I think there's only a few times in our lives where your mind is really blown. Like when you look at something and you go, holy moly, that is crazy.
Yeah.
And I think the first time I heard about ChatGPT, I was like, all right, sure, this was this like glorified Google search or something like that. And then I can't remember who showed it to me for the first time. But then as soon as you start using it and you're seeing it really, really seeing the power of what it can do, that it can talk to you, like what it can recommend, that was one of those moments that I was like, wow, this is something really that we have never seen before. You know, a lot of products and technology is kind of just like iterations or building off of something else. It's kind of like this, but a little bit different, you know? But this was something where I was like, wow, this is new and this is really interesting. No, of course, I don't buy into the AI hype of the stock market and that kind of stuff. I think it's going to be a long grind before and a lot of time and energy put into building AI. But it's something that's very interesting.
I think it
promotes a lot of philosophical debates like, is AI, once we have AI, is that the last invention that humanity ever needs to make? Interesting question. Sorry, Hamish, I cut you off.
No, you're fine. I think for me, that moment was watching some of the videos coming out of Sora, OpenAI Sora, with their text-to-video, which is not released yet, but there's been some demos kind of released. And that is just insane. I mean, that's just something we've never seen before. And it opens up so many possibilities for creating, you know, video games, creating movies, creating content in the future. For the first time, I realized how much content creation or just film is going to change in the next 10 or 20 years.
And it's so early. That's the thing that got me with that video service. What's it called? Sora? That it was generating, sure, you could see it was a little bit wonky. And oftentimes it is wonky, but it's so early and it's already so impressive that give it a few years and it's going to blow our minds, I'm sure. Okay, moving beyond AI, Diamond also discussed inflation. He discussed the potential soft landing for the economy, discussed interest rates, commercial real estate, bank regulation, social media, and geopolitical risks. So we'll go through each one. On inflation, he said, many key economic indicators today continue to be good and possibly improving, including inflation. But when looking ahead to tomorrow, conditions that will affect the future should be considered. All of the following factors appear to be inflationary: ongoing fiscal spending, remilitarization of the world, restructuring of global trade, capital needs of the new green economy, and possibly higher energy costs in the future due to a lack of needed investment in the energy infrastructure. So Diamond, I mean, he said this before, but he definitely kind of takes the stance of, oh, guys, this inflation piece might not be over. Like, it's great if it is, but remember, it's probably not. And these are the reasons for it.
Yeah, and I think I think it's interesting. It's an interesting time because there are so many factors on the inflationary and on the deflationary side that are just out there at the moment. Like, a big one that I think doesn't probably even get enough recognition is AI and how big technological advancements that reduce costs in a sharp way, like the internet, like the steam engine, are extremely deflationary. Right. If everyone suddenly has to have way less labor and their costs go down, that puts massive downward pressure on prices. And it's been one of the biggest deflationary factors of the last 20 years has been the internet and how much that has, and computing as well, if you want to go back another 20 years. But those two technological advancements have put an enormous amount of downward pressure on inflation. And so while there are a lot of inflationary factors out there, like, if countries are increasing their military, that's more spending. If governments are spending more money, that's going to be more debt and more inflation. There are a lot of inflationary factors out there, but we do have this kind of technology that we have no idea how much it's going to remove the need for a lot of jobs. And the deflationary impact that potentially has. So, it's a fascinating time.
It is. Long-term technology is deflationary. You think about it, even like it's everything, all technology starts out expensive and then it gets better and better and it gets cheaper and cheaper. So it makes things easier, gets better. Yeah, you're right. It is deflationary. So you do have those two forces at play. Which one is more powerful than the other? That remains to be seen, I guess. Diamond also spoke about the potential for a soft landing. So this phrase gets chucked around a lot, but nobody ever really talks about exactly what it means. So a soft landing, I looked it up. A soft landing really means that there's been a rise in interest rates, so therefore there's a slowdown of the economy, but the slowdown of the economy, you kind of get through it without causing a big recession. That's what's known as a soft landing in economics. So on that, Diamond says, equity values, by most measures, are at the high end of the valuation range and credit spreads are extremely tight. These markets seem to be pricing in at a 70 to 80% chance of a soft landing, modest growth along with declining inflation and interest rates. I believe the odds are a lot lower than that. So again, Diamond taking a slightly more bearish stance. And I think he kind of does that, not to just be a perma bear, but he kind of gets, I feel like Jamie kind of gets a little bit annoyed at the market speculators, the people that buy Nvidia like at the current price, like that kind of stuff. So he kind of likes to kind of niggle at them and be like, hey guys, we need to like really chill out because things could be worse than you think.
I mean, you do get these times, right, where the market kind of swings back and forth from optimism and pessimism, and it's certainly depending on who you ask, some people will say it's an absolute bubble at the moment, some people just say it's slightly kind of optimistic, but certainly I think everyone can agree markets are optimistic on balance. If you're someone like Jamie Dimon or even a Ray Dalio, I tend to kind of put myself in this camp as well. It kind of makes me nervous when markets are on the optimistic side. I like when they're on the pessimistic side because then, you know, there's upside surprise. But when there's on the optimistic side, especially with so many, you know, macroeconomic factors that have unknown outcomes, it's a little bit of a, you know, walking in darkness.
Yeah. Two more things, Hamish, on interest rates and commercial real estate. Diamond said if long end rates, that's long-term or 10-year government bonds, go up over 6% and this increase is accompanied by a recession, there will be plenty of stress, not just in the banking system, but with leveraged companies and others. Remember, a simple 2 percentage point increase in rates essentially reduced the value of most financial assets by 20%. And certain real estate assets, specifically office real estate, may be worth even less due to the effects of recession and higher vacancies. Mm-hmm. So he sees some potential issues brewing if interest rates stay up. And then finally on geopolitics, he does like to weigh in on geopolitics, Jamie Dimon. He likes to have his say. He says, quote, Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the subsequent aberrant attack on Israel and ongoing violence in the Middle East should have punctured many assumptions about the direction of future safety and security, bringing us to this pivotal time in history. America and the free Western world can no longer maintain a false sense of security based on the illusion that dictatorships and oppressive nations won't use their economic and military powers to advance their aims, particularly against what they perceive as weak, incompetent, and disorganized Western democracies. In a troubled world, we are reminded that national security is and always will be paramount, even if its importance seems to recede in tranquil times. So he's not shy. I find that interesting, like chucking quotes like that in your JP Morgan annual report and letter to shareholders. But
yeah,
Jamie Dimon, I think he's just getting so comfortable that he just likes to just chuck his own opinions in there. But he said that as well. It's a tricky time for the global economy and global supply chains, specifically because of all of these geopolitical risks.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. I'm not sure if I have anything too much to add on geopolitics in the Middle East.
Can you give me your nuanced opinion on the conflict in the Middle East, Hamish?
Well, let me tell you.
Okay. We are definitely drifting outside our lane when it comes to that. So that's pretty much what Jamie Dimon had to say in his letter to shareholders. I will wrap that up and chuck it back over to you, Hamish. What else have you got to talk about? The Forbes billionaire list. What's going on there?
Yeah, so we've got the 2024 Forbes billionaire list has been updated, and shock horror, the rich are richer than ever. So let's
what?
Let's go look at three. I know, it's
surely
amazing,
not.
Right? Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. No way.
There you go.
But there are now more billionaires in the world than ever before. 2,781 on Forbes' list, 144 more
wow.
than last year, and 26 more than the previous record in 2021. So yeah, 2024, or at least at this point in time, the world has the most billionaires that it's ever had.
Wow. Did you make the list, Hamish, or not quite yet?
Not quite, yeah, not quite, yeah.
No, next year, next year.
I was 2782, so yeah, I just missed out by one.
Damn it. That's all right. Yep. Next year. I feel a good year coming for you, Hamish.
Yep. Hopefully. Hopefully we get some continued rate cuts and we'll see. So in aggregate, the 2,781 billionaires are worth $14.2 trillion, which was an increase of $2 trillion in net worth from last year. And is also, of course, an all-time high. So $14.2 trillion. Wow.
That's a fair chunk of change, Hamish Hodder. That is a fair chunk of change.
Yeah, it sure is. Two-thirds of the members are worth more than they were 12 months ago. So most of them continue to grow their wealth. Only one in four, only 25% are poorer than they were last year.
Right.
Of the $2 trillion gained in wealth, $700 billion of it came from the top 20. So, of course, not only is an enormous amount of wealth concentrated in this list of billionaires, but even within the billionaire list, if you can go even more concentrated and just look at the very tippity-top billionaires, was that just over a third of the wealth gained was from those top 20 individuals.
Hmm. Crazy numbers. Crazy numbers.
The US still has the most billionaires in the world. They had a record 813 worth a combined value of $5.7 trillion. China came in at second place, 473 billionaires worth $1.7 trillion. And India is now in third place with 200 billionaires on the list. So, yeah, there you go. China and India, it shouldn't be too surprising, I think, to see them continuing to, gain billionaires at an enormous rate because they have very fast growing economies and they have a lot of people. Mm. So, you would imagine over
that
time,
makes sense.
The US, will probably drop down the list, to China and India, assuming their economies continue to grow as they have at an astounding rate, over the last few decades. Mm. And, the top of the list, it has really not changed all that much. You've got Bernard Arnault, CEO of Louis Vuitton, the Louis Vuitton empire of 75 fashion and cosmetic brands. He's still at number one, worth $233 billion. Elon Musk is in number two at $195 billion. And he was actually one of the billionaires who had a decline in his net worth over the last 12 months. So I can't remember the last time that he was number one on the list, but it must have been sometime last year.
Would have been last year sometime, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe the year before. Yeah.
Hmm. Third place, you have Jeff Bezos at $194 billion. And the only other thing I wanted to note looking through the list was that Taylor Swift is now a billionaire worth $1.1 billion. So there you go.
Get her out. Awesome.
Her Eras tour has paid off. She's now on the list.
Yeah, who would have thought? Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. Not many. Yeah, because I remember looking back a while ago at singer-songwriter artists, and they make a lot of money, obviously. They sell out shows. They're super famous. But they don't actually make... I mean, it's a lot of millions and millions of dollars is a lot of money still. But in terms of some of the business people of the world, it's peanuts.
Yeah.
I was really surprised to learn that, you know, even some of the biggest artists in the world don't have that high of a net worth.
No.
It's interesting that you can be super mega famous. Same with NBA stars. You can be like super mega famous, but in terms of net worth, you'll be beaten by the business people of the world every day of the week. So it's interesting to see, and good on her. Good on her, Taylor Swift. She's copped a lot of flack. But no, I like to see it. She's doing well.
Yeah, there's a surprising lack of money in like royalties for music, for example. The people who really make a lot of money in music are the people who are able to do persistent tours and on a massive scale, you know, doing a Taylor Swift who's selling out the MCG and, you know, doing these enormous shows with, you know, 80,000 people, 90,000 people and doing these long tours across many countries, then, you know, they can make some money. But yeah, it's there's not too many musicians on the billionaires list. I think Jay-Z's on there and there was a couple of others, but I can't remember the names. But yeah, there's not many.
Yeah, cool. All right, that's very interesting. Lots of differences. Lots of differences in the Forbes billionaire list this year. Yeah. Yep. Richies are getting richer than ever before. Who would have thought? All right. should I talk about TSMC?
Yeah. What's going on?
This actually happened really recently. Yesterday, I think, as of time of recording. Sorry, I do have to say a shout out to the Daily Upside for this article. So Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company TSMC, the largest chip maker in the world, was already building a pair of new fabrication plants in Arizona when the Biden administration on Monday made it an offer it couldn't refuse, up to $11.6 billion in federal grants and loans to help TSMC upgrade its manufacturing plans and add a third factory to its Grand Canyon State footprint. This is all a part of the, of course, the CHIPS Act and the Biden administration's, I guess, push to get America into the ring as the as a global leader in semiconductor manufacturing. It says here the US is still a top chip maker, accounting for about 12% of the global industry, but its share was more than three times that in 1990. So the trend is not in favor of the US, and obviously semiconductors are a big thing of the future, and that's why the US government is so so hell-bent on getting chip manufacturing back into the US. Where was I up to? Yes, much of the capacity now exists in East Asian countries, including China, Japan, South Korea, and of course, Taiwan. And because semiconductors are part of pretty much every electronic device, it was a George Foreman-esque gut punch when the pandemic disrupted those supply chains. Yes. The CHIPS and Science Act passed in 2022 earmarked $39 billion in direct grants plus loans and guarantees worth $75 billion towards U.S. chip manufacturing. The White House has just started divvying up the money to eager tech firms, which have collectively announced $200 billion in U.S. investment since Biden took office, Bloomberg reported. And now TSMC, maker of the most advanced chips, is about to get itself a major slice of the pie. So TSMC was awarded $6.6 billion in grants, and it can potentially receive as much as $5 billion in loans. The company has two fabs in Arizona that are expected to start production in 2025 and 2028, and it plans to add a third factory by the end of the decade.
Wow. So, fascinating.
Lots of money. Lots of money in chips in America at the moment. They want to increase that production.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, I've kind of looked a little bit at some kind of investments in semiconductors. I've never invested in the space, but I've found it a place I kind of wanted to look at. And a lot of people kind of view the semiconductor space and particularly memory semiconductors, for example, as essentially the oil of the future. There's going to be this consistent flow of need for computer memory as, you know, companies build out data centers and everything moves more online, and especially now with AI and the enormous amount of processing power that is necessary to run some of these generative AI systems, that that it's kind of like this very highly desired commodity that clearly the US, at least the Biden administration, thinks it's important that they have their own supply and that they're not relying on importing that so-called future oil.
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. Computing components are now commodities. They are a 21st century commodity in much the same way that gold, oil, copper, all the rest of it's a commodity. Now, anything to do with computing power is also a commodity that, you know, nations will need to secure supply of. And that's exactly what has caused all of this money to go towards and the CHIPS Act to be passed and all that sort of stuff. It's interesting. They also said... in March, Intel was awarded $8.5 billion in grants. And in February, GlobalFoundries was awarded $1.5 billion. So
right.
Sources also told Reuters on Monday that the White House could announce between $6 billion and $7 billion in grants for South Korean chipmaker Samsung to expand its output in Texas. So it's all happening. It's interesting specifically on the TSMC front, though, because it's an interesting one because they had already announced and planned these two factories in Arizona. So they were already doing it of their own accord. But the article notes that this is a state that Biden won in 2020 by only about 10,000 votes. So it's interesting now that they win this big grant that helps them expand both of the already locked-in factories and add a third specifically in Arizona. So I thought that was interesting. There was maybe some political motivations to do this, but who knows?
Maybe. Just maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Hamish, that's all I had to say about TSMC, but they have won a lot of money, so congrats to them.
Yep.
Well done. Nailed it. All right, and with that said, guys, that is that's the podcast. That is us done for the day. That is your week of stock market and business news. Hope you enjoyed it. As always, thanks very much, Hamish, for joining me. What do you got on the rest of the day? You doing much?
Editing is the name of the game at the moment. So yeah, working on a new video.
Yeah. Nice. I'll be excited to see that one come out. And as always, guys, thanks very much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the hour of or so of your time that you give us each and every week. We appreciate the support. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us a review. Give us 5 stars on whatever you're rating us on. We like all that sort of stuff. And with that said, we'll see you guys in Omaha. Not really. That's still a while away. We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
All right. See you guys.